All right. The next matter on the calendar is Air Service Corp versus Flight Service Systems. Rebuttal time, counsel, out of 10 minutes.
Your Honor, 3 minutes rebuttal, if we could, please.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Greg McBroom, and I represent Flight Services and Systems, Inc., who are the appellant in this matter. I would like to start with essentially what we're here. We're here on remand, after one remand, and I want to go through what happened on remand. I think that's a critical part of what's... Well,
apparently our services were satisfactory and you came back for more...
That was it, Your Honor. unfortunately, what we've had is, what we think is clearly inappropriate conduct on the remand. In this case, what happened is if you recall, this is a case where Delta arranged for some services for AirServe to provide some services. Okay? It was by... Counsel's own words, it was silence and inaction. You know, basically, you know, there was no agreement on the price. Judge Rogers came out and said there was no agreement on price, there was no meeting of the minds.
What do you believe the scope of the remand was, and how did what happened fall short?
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. The scope of the remand was, very clearly under the remand language, was to actually clarify the findings of material issues. They're talking about the findings of the material issues because what they did, what the Judge Spector...
It was not for a retrial. It was just for clarification.
Absolutely. It absolutely was not, Your Honor. There was no retrial. It was for them, for the judge to go back because this court, in the opinion, couldn't determine how she came up with $83,300 for her damage amount because that's what she applied. It turned out to be expectation damages because that's specifically $175 times the 476 airplanes, which totally came out to the $83,300. So we know that's what she did, but this court needed that to her to explain how that constitutes reasonable value. Because in her opinion, she said her very first statement in her findings and conclusions of her first one said, the issue for this court to decide is the reasonable value of the services.
So what was done wrong on remand?
So what happened on remand is this goes back down, and essentially what happened was there was a request to provide proposed findings and conclusions. AirServe provided proposed findings and conclusions. They scripted out what they thought it would be.
And did you?
We did not, Your Honor. It would have been futile for us. She didn't look at our last ones. What we did is we provided our previous findings and conclusions, which we actually had this information in there.
So you provided those. So she had two sets.
Right. Right. We provided our previous findings and conclusions that we provided previously.
You provided them or she already had them?
We provided them on remand. Yeah, absolutely. And but obviously she didn't look at them. She didn't even look at AirServe's findings and conclusions. She ended up signing off on these findings and conclusions without even reading them.
Did you request a hearing on the oral argument on the findings and conclusions?
Yeah. So procedurally, how this happened is the proposed findings and conclusions were submitted. 5 days later, she signed them off and sent them back to the parties. Okay. After that, they quickly moved to have it entered as a judgment. At that time, we went back to her and said, "Hey, look. We want to have, you know, some discussion on this. We want to be able to provide input." That's exactly what AirServe said should have been done, because in their motion when they wanted to provide proposed findings, they said, you know, as long as opposing counsel gets an opportunity to talk about it and discuss it and voice their objections to those proposed findings, that's fine. That's in their motion. She didn't allow any of that. We definitely voiced objection. We said, you know, there should be a hearing. We should be able to discuss. There was no discussion of the restatements. There was no discussion of Dobbs, Farnsworth, all the authorities that on this matter that guide unjust enrichment. Nothing. All she did was she didn't read it, and this is really egregious, because what AirServe did is they actually increased their fees in their proposed findings and conclusions by $5,000. No new billing statements, no new nothing, just arbitrarily increased their fees and costs by $5,000 compared to what they had requested in their fee application. That was in their proposed findings. Okay, and she also didn't actually look at this because there were alternative provisions put in their proposed findings. She didn't even realize that. It wasn't until later that was brought to her attention. She had her bailiff pull the old proposed findings from the court docket, and then she issued the new one with, of course, the higher damages amount. What they ended up doing was they figured they couldn't meet the standard for reasonable value based upon the remand decision, so they threw that into the garbage, and they started anew. You have a brand new findings of fact and conclusion, and they didn't vacate the old one, by the way, either. So that one's still on the record. She just left that one out there. So there's actually two judgments out there that are pending in this matter. And she didn't look at any. And she took the highest amount on the second one, of course, struck out everything. She applied unjust enrichment in a manner that the state has never applied unjust enrichment. Our position is, and our position has always been, is this is a restitution case. Okay? It's to restore the claimant to the position it would have been. It's a restoration type thing. And that's actually, if you look at the restatement of unjust enrichment and restitution, we're asking this court to apply that. That's what we want. Right now, there's not a lot of guidance. Really, you have Young v. Young, but it doesn't do a lot of guidance because at that time, the restatement of unjust enrichment and restitution was not in play. So they in that case, in Young v. Young, they cited to restatement of contracts. But when you look at the restatement of restitution and unjust enrichment, it says it follows the restatement of contracts. So it's completely consistent. And actually, what they did in Young v. Young is very consistent with what they do in the restatement of unjust enrichment and restitution, third. And specifically, the ones we want this court to apply is Section 36 and Section 50. Okay? Section 50 is the one that talks about what happens when you have a case like this, when you have an innocent recipient. These guys weren't, both parties weren't communicating. The fact of the matter is the two heads had one phone conversation where flight services had person said that they would not accept that amount. So we're asking this court to actually apply the law in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes on rebuttal. Counsel.
May it please the court, my name is David Crow, and I'm here on behalf of AirServe Corporation. I appreciate that most of us were here a couple years ago talking about the same issues, and I appreciate the ruling and the opinion that was done by the court. I think it was pretty straightforward and very clear, and gave a direction to the trial court to follow. Indeed, in the opinion on April 6th, this April 6th court's opinion, authored by Judge Varellan, remanded this matter to the trial court for further findings on both the damages award and the award of sanctions that were by the trial court. In remanding this matter, the court explained that it believed the prior award was probably based on something like expectation damages or maybe an estoppel theory or an account stated doctrine, which was improper and should not have been applied in that matter. And the court found that to be problematic. And in doing so, the court explained on remand that the trial court must articulate the specific measure of damages and make precise findings supporting such damages, whether under a market value, modified disgorgement of profit, or some other rare circumstances measure the value of the services appropriate based upon total circumstances. There is no dispute that in the findings of fact and conclusions of law that were issued by Judge Spector after remand, she clearly articulated the measure of damages that she used. Indeed, she used the modified disgorgement of profit theory. Now, I'm guessing when she used expectation damages, she was trying to be fair and trying to make the parties whole, and she was trying to be an equitable solution. And it was within the range, as argued before you previously, within the range of acceptable damages, but how she got there was a little bit problematic. So there had to be a reassessment. In petitioning the Supreme Court, FSS completely agreed that the disgorgement of profits theory could be used by Judge Spector. Indeed, it has petitioned the Supreme Court stating that this court all but invites Judge Spector to reassess the damages and look at the disgorgement of profits theory. So the fact that now the FSS is arguing that Judge Spector couldn't reassess the damages under a disgorgement of profits theory if she hadn't done so in the first place, which is unclear, is disingenuous with what they petitioned the Supreme Court for in requesting that this matter be, that the law in Washington, in effect, be changed. Now, the petition for remand...
Did FSS get a fair shake in having a chance to present its position on remand?
I can't go through that, how that process happened, because it's slightly different than, I believe, Mr. McBroom presented to you. When it got remanded finally to the trial court, I submitted a motion to the trial court stating, you know, can the parties, since this has been 2 years and been passing, or over a year and passing, since the, or 2 years since the trial court has had trial, can the parties submit proposed findings in relating to the articulation by this court? In response, FSS argued that there's no need for us to give you additional facts. There's no need to give you additional input. In fact, what's in the trial record currently is enough for the trial court, and additional findings shouldn't be allowed. So they abdicated, they stated they don't believe there's anything else they can add. They didn't present Dobbs to the trial court. They didn't present Farnsworth to the trial court. They didn't present their briefing to the Supreme Court why the law should be changed to the trial court or extended but to the trial court. None of that was done. In fact, I don't believe they provided any proposed findings. Their old proposed findings, I never received them. So they might have been provided to the trial court again. So certainly no new proposed findings were provided. And I don't believe the other ones were. At least I never received them. So I'm not sure what happened at that point.
When they responded to your motion, did they request an in-court hearing or oral argument?
No. No, they did not. So the trial court granted our motion and allowed both parties to submit. I requested it for both parties to be able to submit findings if they believe so. FSS said they don't believe it's necessary.
Did you request oral argument?
No.
So she didn't deny oral argument. It was just never requested by either party.
I don't believe I requested it. I mean, it's a notification of the pleading. I don't think I did. No, I wouldn't have requested it for this for ministerial pass, as a matter of fact. So she granted the ability to provide proposed findings by February 12th. AirServe submitted proposed findings, and AirServe, we never received a copy of the prior proposed findings from FSS at that juncture. Of course, we received them in 2013 when they were provided. And they didn't discuss this restitution theories or provide a law to Judge Spector either that's been provided to the Supreme Court and to you in this matter. So she's never really assessed whether she believes that Supreme Court, that the law in Washington should be changed from what Young versus Young stated and what this court stated when it was given to her on remand, that disgorgement of profits was an appropriate remedy. So after the proposed findings we provided were provided on February 12th, the date they were allowed. Under Washington law, a party has 5 days to object to any proposed findings provided to the court. I provided the case citation in the briefing. FSS never objected. They didn't object to what the findings AirServe had. They didn't object to any of the problems they had. They made no indication they were going to object to the findings. They didn't move for any sort of reconsideration. They took no steps. And so we submitted a motion for judgment to be entered. At that point, FSS changed course completely and said, we want a hearing. We want evidence before the court. We want to do all sorts of things. And the trial court entered judgment on the proposed findings that already had entered the proposed findings and then entered judgment based on the proposed findings. Like, there was no motion for consideration after the proposed findings were entered or anything such as that. Just did it. And when the judgment was submitted, there was objection saying this shouldn't be entered at this time. We've got arguments we want to make. But there was no proffer that there was going to argue about a difference in unjust enrichment and how it works out. It just basically stated, we think the court should be limited to one approach to evaluating this damage theory, and that approach should be based on a contract provision that has really nothing to do with the issues before the court in the first place.
In your application for attorney's fees, you indicated that the amount would be in excess of $116,000. The court's amended findings recite that you've requested $120,000 plus.
Well, if you go to the billing statements and the actual attorney fees, that's where you get to the number that was in the amended findings. Versus the $116,700. I didn't request all the fees in my original application or my motion necessarily. I asked for $116,500 because I recognized there would be some sort of deductions that should be applicable. Here, she used the full number that was provided in the affidavits, the actual billings, and subtracted from that in her assessment of the sanction award on remand. And she also discounted the initial sanctions she had in her prior opinion.
So the court had to take from the billing statements, the $120,000?
That's what the evidence was provided to us.
Okay. Thank you.
So FSS position that was taken, you know, before the trial court, you know, it's vehemently argued that disgorgement of profits shouldn't be used as a remedy, but this court allowed it to do so. Before the Supreme Court, FSS acknowledged that that's what this court's opinion rectified. I mean, I don't think this appellate court, and it's a strange position to speak in front of Judge Varela, knowing he wrote the opinion, tell him what I believe his opinion means, but I don't think any reasonable...
That's okay, other people do that all the time.
So. Yeah.
Well, there were multiple theories, and before we said it was right or wrong, we thought we'd like to know which one we were really supposed to rule on. So.
Right, but I don't think...
Now that you're back, we can get decisive.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But I don't think that, and FSS doesn't interpret it, the judge had to somehow try to justify the initial award based on what might have been an incorrect application of a theory that she was trying to get right and the way that she was trying to justify it, and which she found to be a problematic or improper. So, you know, under the facts that were provided, you know, the judgment could be modified. Indeed, FSS acknowledged the judge Specter in its briefing when it was trying to discharge the supersedious bond that was in place that the judge has full ability to modify the judgment. You know, it's not going to be, it doesn't have to be the $83,300 or the $235,000 in total. With this remand order, there is the ability to modify the judgment, and that's what FS used at that time to argue against or to argue for a discharge of the supersedious bond. So now to claim that she was constrained to meet that figure through some sort of analysis that probably wouldn't meet that figure because it was probably an improper analysis that got her there. It doesn't make any sense, and I don't think that's what this court requested, but it's a presumption, I believe, that FSS is making, saying that it's limited to providing that figure.
If we did reach the question of the impact of the restatement of restitution, what's your response to counsel's argument that Young wasn't informed by the restatement of restitution, and so we should take a different look at that?
Well, first, they did inform the Supreme Court of this instance of restitution and the changing the restatement of restitution to the extent that it was changed. And the Supreme Court really had no interest in putting that up for appeal or extending the law as requested by FSS. Secondly, if you look through the restatement of restitution, they do go through an analysis of where there's a conscious wrongdoer. And as pointed out by Judge Specter during trial and in discussion with opposing counsel, how can you get more disingenuous or more consciously be a conscious wrongdoer than not paying your bills or not paying the amounts you owe or knowing that you pay something but not paying for it? And they never paid for it. And it's basically a theft. I mean, that's about as conscious wrongdoing as you can do. What also the court found after having testimony and finding out a few of the declarations that were provided by FSS were false, misleading, and mischaracterized the facts, she found that, yes, it was deceptive. FSS didn't just... It wasn't some dispute that they were, you know, that this was happening and everybody was forthright about how much somebody owed the other. One party just was deceptive and trying to allude that, yeah, we'll pay it, but we recognize we're going to get this compliance agreement at a certain point. And at that point, our negotiation advantage changes and we'll just let it happen and slide away until we no longer have the issue. And for those reasons, I do believe that the judgment as presented on remand should be fully affirmed. Thank you.
Just as an initial matter, no billing statements or anything were provided to Judge Specter for her to actually evaluate the fees, the new fees, the increased fees that they scripted into their findings. That just didn't. And here's what counsel said to Judge Rogers. There's no way the court can assume that this is a fraudulent contract when we have two sophisticated parties who know much more than we do about this industry. All there is silence and inaction. That's Mr. Crow's own statements down below. Okay? It was silence and inaction. That's all there was. This is not a conscious wrongdoer case at all. This is an innocent recipient. Flight Services got what they expected under the contract with Delta. That was a pre-existing contract. There's no unjust enrichment from that contract. They got exactly what they contracted for with them. So, you know, the issue here is on the unjust enrichment side. You
can't have it both ways, though, right? There is a contract or there isn't. We're in the realm of there is no contract.
Correct. Right. Correct. And what the law says, if you look at the restatements and that sort of stuff, is, I mean, obviously you can't have more than what the other side would be requesting in a contract. when you're doing unjust enrichment. That just doesn't make sense. And the law also states under it is that in most cases, it'll be much less than what the person actually expects in contract. Okay? There's just no, and I think it gets into, you know, we talked about Farnsworth, and we talked about Dobbs. We use Dobbs and the restatement. But there's got to be some causation. There's got to be some causation. There's no nexus between their services that they provided, which was a $10 an hour person doing this job, and what they're asking for is $300, $600 an hour, actually, to do the job. But they paid this guy $10 an hour to do the job. There's no nexus between what they did and the gross revenue services that Judge Spector provided. Gross revenues, total gross revenues.
Let's see. There's no agreed contract amount. There's no evidence of a market value for the services. There's no evidence of what your actual costs were to get to net profits. So the only measure she really had was the gross profit, wasn't it?
I would not agree with that. Actually, in AirServe himself.
I'm talking about what was
right.
The evidence.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you, in evidence, Mr. Wynn from AirServe said that under how he came up with this $175 amount, he put a $5 profit in there. $5 per hour. $5 in profit.
But you rejected the $175 charge.
Correct. But you also have the out-of-scope services that were provided in the contract that were agreed. That was an arm's-length transaction between Delta and Flight Services and Delta and AirServe. It was $16.05 for AirServe and $14 an hour for Flight Services. Those were negotiated before all this happened. That was in evidence.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That concludes our calendar for this morning. The court will be in recess.
Thank you.